Ramble.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Voulez-vous coucher avec moi? Welcome to Guilty Pleasures. Today, we're talking about Moulin Rouge. I forgot what it was called for a second.
Moulin Rouge.
Moulin Rouge.
Moulin Rouge. Joining us in the studio, we got Keith the Man Habersberger.
Hi,
I'm here to talk about this movie that I unabashedly love. Rachel's here.
What?
She's being sneaky.
We'll Rachel just came in. She said we're not allowed to scream for the first 10, 15 minutes of this episode.
Fucking promises.
Yeah.
But then when I told her we were doing Moulin Rouge, she crossed her legs and gently like fell to the ground for a second as if it was too much to handle.
Garrick is not here, not only because he hates musicals, but I think it's for the best.
But this is the musical for the modern man.
Tell me about it.
Moulin Rouge is a story of love.
That's it, period.
That's it. It's a poor poet artist and
a penniless beggar
and a dying courtesan find love. It's literally
a courtesan cream?
Courtesan?
Isn't she like is that what you call them? Like in that age? A prostitute?
Courtesan.
Courtesan?
Courtesan. Courtesan?
I don't think it's a
courtesan. She's an accordion?
She's an accordion.
It's definitely not courtesan.
Courtesan.
What? I wasn't actually very clear on what her job was.
I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
She was a hooker performer.
Yeah.
Wait. You didn't even finish introduction.
Hi.
Garrick's not here because he's filming a movie.
But Kelsey's here.
Very excited.
And she's dressed like the Riddler.
Thank you. I tried to dress cuckoo for Moulin Rouge.
Uh-huh.
Now, give us the log line and then our personal experiences.
Okay, sure.
a courtesan. C-O-U-R-T-E-S-A-N. Courtesan, in modern usage, is a euphemism for a kept mistress or prostitute, particularly one with wealthy, powerful, or influential clients. She is tied to the duke.
That is a direct definition of what
courtesan.
The diamond is, but yeah. Carry on, Zach.
So yeah, the poor poet loves the courtesan. The courtesan, however, is betrothed to the duke. Mm-hmm. So the poet is like, well, what if I wrote the play for the Moulin Rouge to make it money? We'll still have the duke's money. You pretend to be in love with the duke, but we'll literally write a play about what is happening right now because that's all he can write about because he's so in love. So he's writing a play about the movie we're watching in the movie.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But instead of him, it's like, it's a magical sitar. It's just really goofy.
They like place it in India.
It's placed in India. It's just this really goofy, ridiculous romp. It's a musical entirely comprised of modern songs that were popular in the 80s and 90s and maybe early aughts. Was it late 90s that it came out?
Yeah. No.
It was early aughts. It was like 2001,
I think. Yeah.
Somewhere in there. And it's this wonderful musical about love, and the story in the play within a play is paralleling everything happening, and it has this grand ending number, and there's a gun.
And that's all you need to know.
He just kind of nailed the synopsis for me. He got me off the hook, because I was going to say, it's wacky.
Yeah.
It's absolutely wacky.
And it's made by Baz Luhrmann, who did The Great Gatsby.
It's important to know Baz Luhrmann, who is the king of style. He did most recently Elvis. He did Romeo plus Juliet.
The OG version.
Great Gatsby, as you said. And I think this is one of the movies that he is most known for. He didn't create, but he's certainly the king of the modern jukebox musical, which this is. It's a musical that takes
art
a
house.
Bunch of is it art house?
Yeah.
I don't know that it is.
I
think it's like pop candy pretending to be art house.
No.
It's I don't know.
This
it's
is
definitely
this
jumping
is an
back and
acid
forth
trip.
That line.
It's definitely acid trip. I wrote in my notes, I think that this movie is Speed Racer for gay people.
Did you? Speaking of gay people, Baz Luhrmann is not gay.
Which is crazy to
me. Crazy to
me. Because Baz Luhrmann makes the most eccentric, over-the-top
shit.
Just Romeo and Juliet, Moulin Rouge. Like, these are love stories that are like capital L love.
Yeah.
And like everyone pouring their heart out, like penniless writers.
Yeah.
It's just sort of over-the-top love.
Yeah.
Yeah. Love, 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 love. I like it. And I was, so I didn't have time to rewatch the movie, but it's fresh in my mind.
Le Scandal.
I probably watch this movie twice a year anyway.
Same.
Because it's just a good, it's a good Saturday mm-hmm. night, but you don't want to do anything. And like, it will hit. It's going
to
hit.
Do you know what I comp this movie to that we have done on the podcast that people will remember me saying is Hook is a movie you could watch over and over again because every time you watch it, you're like, I didn't notice that thing in the corner. Or like, look at the way they made that basket or the crazy treehouse has a weird...
I want to run around on the Hook set more than anything else.
Should have been here for the episode. It was great.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it would have been fun.
That set.
So you as a fuck frolicky me. Boy, me as a queer theater kid wanted to definitely run around the set of Moulin Rouge in high school. Yeah. I was like, how do I get to be that gal? And... did you see the Broadway show?
So I didn't. Becky did, and she hated it.
Did you like
it? Hated it?
Yeah, she thought it was horrible.
Did she like
and
the
she
movie?
She loves the movie.
She loves the movie.
Okay, I love the movie.
Adores
and
the
I
movie.
Fucking loved the musical.
It's on Broadway right now.
It's on Broadway. It is the most, it feels like a parody of someone who like heard about what Broadway is and was like, okay, so the whole theater is lights. You have to squint your eyes the entire time because you can't see because there's so much confetti and there's actual like hazardous objects flying at you. At all points, it's color, it's fun, it's ridiculous. It's so good. So I have to get shout out to the Broadway version. If you ever have the chance to go see, you absolutely have to.
I guess Becky also saw it right after one of the main people was replaced, and she said that person was really bad.
I wasn't looking at the people.
She didn't like
I don't
it,
give a shit.
But I don't care about the Broadway version. I think the movie is one of the best musicals you can watch of a movie musical.
Yes.
It's just so, because musicals are supposed to be really fun and ridiculous. But the problem with movie musicals versus theater musicals is that it's about, like, normally theater musicals are about big choreography. And I think West Side Story did a really good job of filming choreography.
Yeah.
But most of them are kind of boring. They kind of are boring. And this, instead of shooting it like a musical, it shoots it like a music video the whole time. It's like an hour and a half music video. Yeah. And it's just so loud. Mm-hmm. The colors are so saturated. It is just a visual.
The filming style, the editing style. We want to talk about all that. I want to hear.
You want to know our personal experiences?
I kind of heard it, but I would love to. Yeah, sure, Kelsey.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mine is I fucking love this movie. Yeah. I watched a girl named Chelsea Brummett's house in high school, and she was the coolest girl in school. And I was like, wow, the coolest girl showed me the coolest movie.
This was your first time you watched it.
It
you
was
were
in
at the
high
coolest
school.
Girl in school's
yeah,
house.
Yeah, so it was a big deal. And I was huge. Like, oh, this is like one of those movies that they talk about when you like first feel a tingle in your vagina. I was going to say vagina, but I realize you both have penises. When you're like, wait a minute.
I mean,
do
Ewan
I
McGregor,
know what horny is?
Ewan McGregor and Nicole Kidman in this movie, both at their peak hotness.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
God.
She's
so
hot. And I don't actually, in any other movie, I'm not really that attracted to her. She's so hot.
She's getting in this film. And I love this movie so much that, number one, it's my karaoke jam. Lady Marmalade and Elephant Love Song Memory are my top two karaoke song choices.
Yeah.
I love the movie so much that for my 25th birthday, I went to Paris and all I wanted to do was see Moulin Rouge. That's all I wanted to do. And it was sold out for the night of my birthday.
Wait, what do you mean it was sold out?
Moulin Rouge is a place.
It's a place.
And what is it?
It's a show.
It's a cabaret.
Yeah, it's a cabaret show in Paris that you can go see.
Does everyone know that?
At the literal like lighthouse with the spinning
and
wheel.
It's
that's a real fucking place?
Yes.
Yeah.
This is based on a true story.
How the fuck am I supposed to know that?
Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
It's based on a true story.
When you watch this movie, you don't think this has got to be real somewhere.
Yeah, because it's an acid trip.
Did you know it, Miles?
No, I had no idea.
Okay.
Sorry, we're so cultured.
I just knew that it existed. I don't know how I knew it existed, but I knew it existed.
Okay, so it definitely exists. It's a place.
You fucked up planning your vacation.
Yeah,
that's why the moral of the story
is
always
planning.
I didn't get tickets, and we ended up. We're like, well, you can go to Crazy Horse, which is exactly like Moulin Rouge. You guys are gonna love it. Here's some tickets. I was with my father, my mother, and my sister. Crazy Horse is a titty bar.
Hey,
it is not Moulin Rouge. It is not cabaret. It's not go-go dance dance can can girl. And so, like two songs in, and there's like nipples in our face, and I was like, this is very uncomfortable. My dad was like, we gotta go.
I would imagine that the Dara family was into it.
We weren't drinking,
So
it was like it's still kind of bright outside, and we're at a titty bar. Like we gotta go.
Uh-huh. Titties so, in the daytime, it hit different.
Titties in the nighttime, titties at some time.
Yeah, it is a little. It, you know those nights where the sun comes up and you're like, oh, I'm still awake. It felt like that, but it was like. like 3
p.m. But it was actually the afternoon.
Yeah. So I fucking love this movie. I have no cons, and I dare you to try and give me one.
And then, Keith, I asked you to come because I didn't know if you loved this movie, but I know that you love
musicals.
The musicals, and I know that you love the song from this movie. I have seen you sing Elephant Love Medley at karaoke more times than I need
Keith
to in a lifetime.
More times than I wanted to sing it, but I am, because people know I know it,
that it's
they
forced
come to
upon
me and be
you.
Like, Keith, let's sing this song. I'm like, okay. And I'll just yeah. say I'm very much a yes, I'll do whatever kind of person.
There you are.
And you crush it.
And I love it. It's fun. And I'll do either part. I'll do the girl part, I'll do the guy part. I'll jump to a harmonic part. If you want to, you don't know what the harmony these line is, I'll do the harmony line. Don't
For those who don't know, Elephant Love Medley hits so many big
bangers.
Pop songs. I'm trying to remember it. I know Heroes by David Bowie's in it.
Love lifts up where we belong. It's basically they're all songs that have the word love. It's a love medley. It's on top of the elephant.
Yeah. And it's song. And the elephant is a real thing. It's a theater. It's
that
a
shut
real.
Up.
Yes.
You shut your Riddler mouth right now.
I can't. This elephant is so fire. but going back to what Keith did say about how this movie, like if you think you've seen Speed Racer and we lost our fucking minds, like our eyes were bleeding for like color. It's everything about this movie is loud, dramatic, colorful, which I feel like this is why I love it, is because that is like a perfect description of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let this outfit show you. But it gives you so much of performance. The entire thing, from the editing to the costuming to the design to the actual performances, the accents, the music. What I loved about this movie, it like reminded me why I fucking love movies when you mix them with musicals.
Wow.
Specifically, it's so fun.
Would
it
you
was
say
nominated.
That heartbreak feels good in a place like this?
You know, I had someone stand up and quote it in my theater the other day when I went to go see Thor, and it was fantastic.
Incredible.
It's just so like constantly overwhelmingly visual, even
the
like
editing.
And they do a lot of like little goofy jokes.
Yeah,
like they break
do you remember
up the
when you first saw it?
So I first saw it,
yeah,
at my newest girlfriend's house when I was
Ooh.
A junior and she was a freshman. We were both in marching band.
Ooh,
and
hot band
it was the first time I'd gone over to her house. She's like, do you want to come over to my house and watch a movie? I was like, sure, sounds good.
You think you're gonna get laid and then instead you see Moulin Rouge?
Well, I'm thinking we're gonna make out. You know, because her parents were home. So I'm
Bold.
Like, I don't think I'm getting laid, but they were leaving us alone in the living room. So I'm like, maybe I can get a kissy kiss.
Ooh,
maybe nope. I can get a kissy kiss. But I'm like, she's like, do you want to watch Moulin Rouge? And I didn't know anything about it. And I'm like, and Keith, really? I didn't really want to. But I was like, this is just going to be something we kissy kiss to. So
oh,
who cares?
No,
who
no, cares?
We put that movie on.
No,
there's no time for kissy kiss.
No. This is not a background.
I was like,
making out
this
movie.
Is incredible.
It
I was
is.
Like, this
you
is so good.
Gave up kissy kiss. For
I'm
this
sure we
movie.
Had a kissy kiss, but I was
at least
significantly.
There's no
invested.
Way you don't get horny watching this.
I was definitely like, I was like, wow, this is amazing. But it was so. But it's also so emotional. I'm also a very music-driven emotion person.
Mm-hmm.
So like, whereas I rarely emote. Mm-hmm. Music is the thing that will make
you
emote.
Cry.
So like a good scoring to
do
a sad scene.
Do you rarely emote?
I think in
is that,
sad.
Is that something
he's
you would
very
say about
no, like when it comes to intensity, it, okay, like practicality, right.
okay,
he's
okay.
very logic based. He'll be like this about logic,
yeah.
but he's not gonna fly off the
and
fucking
I don't,
handle.
Like, I do fly off the handle like it is a performative thing, but I guess I don't cry publicly.
Uh-huh. There you go.
Okay,
I'm not moved to tears by most many things, but music is the number one thing that does it.
Yeah.
So music, the way that song is so sad and sweet and emotional, and also the emotions of the love and this person dying, it is impossible for me not to emote, which of course I think as a high school boy with your girlfriend, that is probably a huge turn on to her. She's like, wow, this boy is crying at this movie.
You know what? I want to give him a kissy kiss and dance up.
Yeah, I really remember thinking I was not going to like that movie, and I thought it was so good, and I wanted to talk, and I think I watched it the next night with my neighbor friend, Casey.
Wow.
I was like, we
did you
have
make
to
out
watch
with her?
It. No, she was like my sister. I'd known her since I was 5.
So did you make out with her?
I don't think we ever made out.
Oh, okay.
Maybe in second grade
wow,
we kissed.
Wow.
Oh, okay. Zach, is this your first time seeing it?
So I thought I had seen this movie. I watched it last night.
No.
Turns out I was super fucking wrong.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, watching this movie for the first time, it is an absolute onslaught on all of your senses. I wasn't. I don't even know how I would handle it if I were high. I have a series of questions about it throughout this episode, but I'm just going to tell you at the gate, I don't get it.
What?
I seriously super duper don't get the appeal. I don't understand how this movie is so huge. I don't understand how it was nominated for 8 Oscars. It won 2 of them.
Yeah.
I think this movie is batshit, and it stuns me that Baz Luhrmann is as accessible as he is, which kind of thrills me. It's like, because this is batshit filmmaking.
It's crazy.
Edited like a crazy YouTube video.
The way you say that it's music video filmmaking is correct.
Yes.
Selling a little or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Should we just dive into some details?
Sure.
The editing... it gave me palpitations.
Yes,
it's like if Jason Statham in the movie Crank became an editor for a little bit.
He threw his headphones off trying to describe the editing.
Because that's how enigmatic it feels.
Listen to this. This is the rate of the
way
cut.
The shots
There's
change.
Not... Yeah. He doesn't hold on shots almost ever in this movie.
Not and more than 5 seconds
so
in the beginning.
So much beautiful shit. And it's just like, you can't even fucking see any of
No, they except want you for, to keep moving.
Except for the quick change scene of them explaining the play. Mm-hmm. But instead of having fast editing, it's just crazy camera work.
Yeah.
It's just spinning the camera.
It was nominated for Best Cinematography, too.
I don't... Okay,
it's because no one had ever seen somebody dare to present
to
a film like
that. It's what, when you hear, like, ADHD and Adderall, it's what you, like, imagine the craziest version is. And it is.
Well, they're drinking absinthe in the movie.
Yes.
And this film is dipped
We all drank absinthe.
Together?
But it wasn't real.
I felt high.
Yeah.
This
I
movie
felt
sees the fairy.
From my body.
I don't know. You're supposed to like actually immediately hallucinate wildly. And
I felt out of my own body.
I think this is more than absinthe. I think this movie is like huffing ether.
Yeah.
This movie is like
paint.
Mercury poisoning.
Yeah.
And then they gave someone a camera. I wrote Moulin Rouge is Speed Racer for gay people. I wrote Moulin Rouge is that scene where Bugs Bunny wears a red dress, but as a whole movie. It's so fucking wacky. And I think the first question that I have, and this is about Baz Luhrmann in general, but specifically this movie, is Moulin Rouge funny?
Yes.
Oh, I think it's very
hysterical.
Funny.
It's a riotous
Open the door.
Open the door.
The characters are ridiculous.
And we'll look at specifically the first time we meet John Leguizamo and the other merry bohemian men. That's a comedy scene.
Oh, I wrote down the group scenes are so fucking fun. The comedy and timing always works, and that is so hard. In reality, it felt like you were watching a play when they were coming up with the play on the spot for the first time in front of the Duke, not just in the attic, but when they're coming up, that is like 8 heavy hitter actors in the room who are outdoing each other number line by line, and the pacing of the jokes,
the cue pickup is great.
Fucking work.
It must have been so unbelievable as a performer in this movie to say, hey, go further.
Yeah.
Just however far you think you're supposed to go, I want you to go further.
And you know how the lines are like stacked on top of each other? I'm like, did they take any pause between... They had to have taken pauses between lines to get clean reads of they editing.
And but they're also like all moving dramatically on almost all those lines. They're like jumping around. They're like...
Yeah, throwing their hands in the air. Yeah.
You know what it felt like to me is the skits that we've done together when we're on acid. It's you go into a bedroom invited. And like you're wear like John Leguizamo's literally wearing a yellow shirt as hair and like someone's wearing goofy sunglasses and like I'm a person and I do this.
Yes.
It's just like a bunch of people on drugs telling stories to each other.
It made it I remember the first time seeing it that it gave me a stomach ache because I felt so uncomfortable watching people act that way. I was like, what is this artistic bohemian revolution happening on the other side of the world that people are acting so fucking weird and like wearing makeup and like crazy blush. Yeah. And it did give me a tum-tum ache.
See, at that time in my life, I was mostly watching really goofy bananas, like Monty Python stuff. Mm-hmm. And
this
like,
fits right in.
So to I was like, this is exactly what I like. And I was so afraid that it being called Moulin Rouge and it being a love story in Paris that I was going to think it was terrible.
Sure.
And then I started watching it and it's nonsense. I was like, this is great. But it does have real emotions, which is why I think it's because it is so absolutely ridiculous and still makes you feel things. It's why it's a movie that's good.
When you mentioned the wackiness of it, they literally, I mentioned Bugs Bunny before, like it has Looney Tunes movement and also sound effects.
Yes.
So people will turn and it's like, prank.
It's Three Stooges at times for sure, and like don't they have all of them looking around a door frame and their heads are all stacked and like it's just
yes,
it's ridiculous.
But
it's
like
so
the
fun.
Fact I didn't wear makeup today specifically because I was crying watching this movie. The fact that it can have Looney Tunes sound effects against a live action fucking Bohemian Rhapsody love story and then make me sob uncontrollably still at the end, even though I've seen this movie 1,000 times.
He's trying to kill you.
What is it? The He's greatest lesson in life is to love and be loved in return.
Yeah.
Oh my God, isn't it?
I'm gonna cry again. I felt the love stuff was a little cheap.
What?
I felt it was a little cheap.
What was cheap?
It's just, he just says the word love a lot and we're all like, oh, swoon.
He's so in love.
It's
what
easy.
What about all the times they're making out and running around like little teenagers falling in love backstage trying to hide it from everybody?
I didn't feel it like I felt it in Titanic, I'll say that.
Maybe because you never had an experience that way.
You're just like, I've never been in love.
I would say if you have, and I didn't really, but if you have been dating someone in the cast of a show and you steal kisses backstage, there's something there.
There's something there.
That was my favorite part of the movie is that this nailed drama club horniness. Let's talk about it.
Oh, you're
you can't
troops.
Not be in
6529 right here, baby, for superior for my school. I am bitch.
If you are in a play, we're making out.
We are making out. I don't care if you're the sound guy. I don't care if you're backstage manager. I don't care if you're doing lights. I don't care if you're the lead. We're making out.
Wow. I really missed out on a lot of these opportunities being someone who only was in a school that had theater productions when I was a senior. And like a lot of connections had already been made. So I like all of my like where I would have maybe had those opportunities. I was in fucking middle of Tennessee. Like I was kissing girls literally in the woods.
It's amazing to me that you're not gay. Just like Baz Luhrmann.
I get that.
Just like Baz Luhrmann.
I get that.
I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, I guess I see you as straight, but in my mind, you're gay.
I mean, a lot of people, the whole internet seems to think I'm bi, which I'm not.
You don't know.
I'm great bi representation on the channel.
You might not know.
Prove it.
I don't know.
Kiss me and tell me you feel nothing.
I kissed a lot of dudes.
Yeah, but
it's never
theater.
Made me want to go further.
For theater, you never did it out of your own passion.
True. I didn't.
Exactly.
I did kiss a guy when I was drunk in college. Like, let's try this out. Like, nah.
Yeah,
not
but did
for
you
me.
Like him? Or were you just like, let's just do it and see what the fuss is about?
He was a gay guy and I think he was one of those people like, well, have you ever kissed a guy? I was like, well, not really. He was like, well, won't you want to know?
But
I'm like,
you
okay.
Didn't get a bone.
It didn't do it for me.
Yeah.
He was a fine kisser.
He was a fine kisser.
That just didn't do it for me. I was like, not for me. But you know what? Fun.
Nicole Kidman is really going for it in this movie. And I think that this we might have to call this peak Nicole, where she's just at the height of her power.
She, first of all, is very young in this.
Yeah.
She was nominated for
Best Actress.
An Oscar for this. And
this, I should have said this out front at the gate. Like, this is the first, this is the most awarded movie that we are doing. You may think that it's crazy that we're doing this on the show, but this is a real, even on the review on Rotten Tomatoes, it says this is a love it or hate it movie. This is a bombastic film. It's good. It's like 78 or something.
Okay, yeah, because it really is a love or hate.
But it plays in the extremes, which is why I thought it was good for this show. But anyway, Nicole Kidman.
So Nicole Kidman is introduced in the beginning. Remember, they tell you straight up she's going to die, but you're just like, you forget immediately as soon as you enter the wondrous, fantastical world that is Melanie's. And her entrance.
Oh my God.
Ah, Keith, your eyes just gave me everything. It's in
choppy slow motion. It's like they didn't actually shoot it in a higher frame rate.
I've decided that was a style choice because I just refuse to believe that it happened over and over again.
It's, oh God, we have so to talk. Okay, so, it's throughout the fucking movie and it's wild. Yeah. Maybe we'll come back to it.
Yeah. So Satine, her character, is the diamond of the show. She's the big grand entrance. She's the showstopper,
number in their
and
set.
She descends from a swing coming through the roof.
She's shimmering silver.
Into the middle of a sea of 1,000 dressed in tuxedo penguin men. Yeah. And she is
Colin Farrell played all of them.
Dripping in sparkle. And she comes out and she's doing that acapella. And she breaks into the and it's about high speed. And men are like dogs thumping their foot. Like you hit
nuts.
The right spot on their tum tum. She is hot. I was dancing in my chair. She comes and she does a whole number. We find out that her and the conductor guy, what is he technically? The
Ziegler.
Director of the show, that they really need money because they're kind of turning into like a rundown brothel because she also sells her body for money. We love the sex worker here. And we find out through this opening number that he has gotten the Duke here and the Duke wants to fuck her, and if she fucks him, then he will fund their next show, which she wants nothing more than to be
she wants to be an actress.
She doesn't want to be a sex worker. She doesn't want to be a Moulin Rouge girl. She wants to be a real actress.
And she looks into the crowd and she thinks that Ewan McGregor
is the Duke. Because our boys
so
do a little switcheroo.
You're going to come with me. And he's like, huh?
I'm the one?
The hottest lady in the room wants me?
And he had been there to try and read her his poems so that he would convince her to star in their next play.
Yeah.
And it all comes to a head when she brings him up to the elephant head.
And then the Duke shows up.
So
what I love about that scene when she's basically trying to distract him and like play goofy, sexy.
Yeah.
But it's still very hot what she's doing. Even though it's cartoonish, she's like, rah, rah, rah. And I'm like, this is still kind of doing it for me.
Honestly.
It's just ridiculous, but it's still effective.
You will never see Nicole Kidman bark and howl in any other film the way that she barks in this movie.
She goes so far. The opening
over
was
and over again.
The opening was too much for me, but like when I started to buy in was the scene where you finally have the two characters together in this. I mean, if you picture the Moulin Rouge poster, it's that like heart shaped room. That's
it's
where
like
they're
a
doing
tree house
it.
Treehouse of fucking.
And you have this great you have this great comedy setup where she thinks that he's the Duke and that he's there to have sex, and that's
and
what
fun
he
their
wants.
Play, yes.
But he doesn't know that, and so she's trying to seduce him. He's confused about it, so he's saying things, but she thinks it's about sex. Where he's like, "I'd be more comfortable standing," and he's like, "It's a bit long, okay.
So I want to make sure the thing I do is a bit modern, so it might feel weird at first." And he's talking about reading her a poem, and she's like, "Oh, okay, sure.
We can do it that way." Well,
But to see an actress of that caliber
go
so fucking hard in the paint is kind of miraculous.
Hard in the paint. That was fun to say.
And what really sold it to me, it's a basketball phrase. What really sold her performance to me was actually her reactions. And the Elephant Love Medley is a great scene for a lot of reasons. Mm. It's the scene that like their whole love story hinges on.
Mm-hmm.
But the look on her face seeing Ewan McGregor sing makes makes me believe in their love, and it's just her reaction. It makes me like his music more, even though I don't really like that. I don't like covers of songs, so that's just the thing about me.
Right.
But I'm like, oh, wow, he's really doing it. And so it's just the power of her face, and that's when you have a movie star. And she is a movie star in this movie.
It's the moment that he, so it's been quiet finally, that opening number was absolutely just like cocaine on cocaine. And then you get upstairs and they're fumbling around and she's trying to fuck him and he's trying to get her off of him and he just breaks out, "The hills are low." And, and you are like, I gave myself chills just now. Like when he introduces that sweet honey voice, I mean, I would drop trial for him.
You know
too.
What I just realized? So obviously it's very anachronistic with the music. We have, they do a Madonna cover. You have a whole group of people singing Smells Like Teen Spirit, which really I couldn't have hated more. I just fucking
I definitely, when that first happened, when I was first watching it, I was like, the fuck is happening?
And then
I decided, yeah, okay. And I liked it. And then I also, like you, I don't really typically like cover medley things. On paper, I don't like the songs.
But
in execution,
it works.
They really work. And it is such a funny, weird medley duet. And I haven't really seen a medley duet like that before.
That's, I think, what makes the Elephant Medley fun
the
is
mash-up.
That they're
exactly. back and forth.
It's DJ Earworm, baby.
Yeah.
But what I just realized is that Hills Are Alive is from Sound of Music, which is about Nazis. And in this, the Nazis haven't happened yet because this is 1900. So, I mean, they're all confusing songs,
huge
but that one is. that's the most confusing of them to me.
Yeah,
that was a little odd.
I can forgive Madonna.
Maybe the intention there is that they're actually the ones creating these little pieces of what will next be big famous songs.
Perhaps.
Yeah. And they all originated. Okay.
I'm back on board.
Okay, so now that we've got a theory going.
So the music is probably something we should dedicate some time to. For me, some of it really works. Elephant Love Medley. And then you get Roxanne.
That one might have been my least favorite.
Definitely is the worst number in the movie.
Yeah.
You have a gruff cover of The Police, which is funny because Sting has a very high-pitched voice.
Do we think Nicole Kidman sings?
Do we think she sings? I'm not.
I think she sings.
I think Ewan sings.
Oh, Ewan.
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 What else does he sing in? Does he sing more?
Oh, he sings in the prequels.
What?
In the new Obi-Wan series, he sings
Annie.
A lot.
Okay, he's a great singer. He's fantastic.
Yeah, he sings in the musical Annie, but it's about Anakin Skywalker.
There's also a very funny, they love taking songs with high pitches and then having gruff low versions. Yeah. They have two men duetting Like a Virgin.
Yep, that very was a goofy one.
Virgin.
Yep. They're dancing around manically. I mean,
starring Paddington's very own, I forget his name. It's the guy.
Oh, Professor from Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Slughorn. He's Professor Slughorn.
And I was like, when is this motherfucker going to get that book for Aunt Lucy?
Yeah. Well, yeah. He was so good in this as the conductor who plays like a daddy role to Nicole Kidman's character. He wants to keep her there forever. He's kind of clinging onto her because he knows she's going to be a star. But that villain, that Duke.
The Duke.
Was so spooky.
I like him.
He scared the shit out of me.
He is so like the guy in Jumanji.
Oh, yeah, the hunter.
That hunts them down.
Wait, like, I would not be surprised
I almost think
the same
it
actor.
Is the same
I,
man.
I think they're different. I looked up this guy because I thought the Duke in this,
was
I don't have his name, but he's great.
Yeah.
And he wasn't in, I mean, he definitely had a great long career, but not, I feel,
not
I'm
as
stunned
big
he
as,
didn't get it more work after this.
Yeah, he scared
me. He's in Van Helsing.
He was literally a tiny, brawny little man, but he showed me like the power of what a guy with money and like not being able to take no for an answer could do.
Ooh.
And I just remember being scared shitless of those guys, like the little monocle Monopoly man type.
He seems like, when you first meet him, like, this guy's not
he's
really.
He's going to get stomped
on. And then by the end, you're like, this guy's fucking crazy.
Because
he's going to kill somebody.
Yeah. And like, that's his story arc, right? Is that he thinks, he tells our conductor, I will fund this play if you write a contract stating Satine is mine, which Didn't know you could do that
to
women
different
in 1899. And slowly he has no idea what the play is about. He's just like following whatever the writers and the company's doing.
He seems like an idiot, but then he does seem to also be catching on.
And he starts to realize, wait, this play is about what's happening to me in real life with my sweet Satine. And he becomes so enraged. Eventually he threatens that he's going to make him change the ending of the musical so that the girl ends up with the big bad guy. Yeah. And Satine's like, no, it's fine. I'll sleep with you in order to keep the ending how it is. And then he is like, oh, I'm going to have Christian killed because you love him. And then he literally like has a hitman that travels with him 24/7 to just kill people.
Yeah.
And then like sends him after Christian. And then he tries to commit murder against Satine in the end, which we all just kind of like look over that. What happened to that guy? Was he arrested?
Just again, if we haven't fully properly captured how wacky this movie is, at the end of it, you have in the climax, this gun flying all around. And at the very end, is it Ziegler? Someone punches the gun out of his hand. Yep. The gun goes woo, 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 flies, crashes through a window, out the window, and dings off the Eiffel Tower.
Yes.
It's fucking...
Yeah.
Well, have you not seen this, Miles?
Not a long time.
Oh,
he punches
God.
Him in the face, and he falls backward with such force that he throws the gun to the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah,
it's incredible. It's
quick aside, so did you notice that Ziegler was underlit in every shot in the movie? He made me so uncomfortable to look at.
It's his eyes.
Yeah.
Well, and think about mustache. It. When you're thinking about like a ringleader, where are you looking at him from? You're looking up at him, and he is this towering figure.
Or he has like, he's under a heavy spotlight, and he's always like,
It's all these spotlights.
Yeah.
Can we talk about John Leguizamo?
Who?
John Leguizamo. So John Leguizamo, Luigi himself, is in this movie. He plays a little person. He's not a little person.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And he is giving a performance that I can only describe as not great.
A lisp. He has a weird, strange lisp.
He talks like this the whole time. Yeah.
He's trying to kill you.
He's trying to kill. I feel like John, because he was in Romeo plus Juliet. He was very good in it. That's what it's called. It's a plus sign. I feel like he did something bad to Boz. And Boz was like, I'll cast you in my next movie. I'm going to cast you, all right.
There's going to be some stipulations.
Yeah.
I think this was his punishment.
He plays he's giving me narrator energy. He's giving me like,
oh, I would have loved if he were the narrator.
What role does he serve? He's in the theatrical ensemble.
Yes.
And he plays the sitar in the magical sitar that looks like a dick. He runs around backstage a lot during that final performance trying to stop the bad guy. Because he's the only guy who catches on.
Mm-hmm. And what's crazy is that the whole ensemble, but especially him, is so invested in their love story.
Oh, well, like we said, when you're in musical theater, you are spending every waking moment with these people. How could they not know?
They have so many reaction shots where John Leguizamo is like on the verge or like fully in tears and cares more about them being together than even they do.
Don't you have people that you root for close to you that when they're in the midst of a breakup, you're like, come on, guys, get back together.
I'm rooting for those crazy kids. Out.
Yeah.
Joe and Coy,
he's
Chelsea
that
Hammer,
guy.
Can't
he's,
just stay together.
Are they not? They broke up?
No. What?
Like last night.
Oh. No, they fucking didn't.
Keith.
I'm sorry to break the news.
Wait, how?
I assumed you knew. You're
how?
Such a stan.
I like, haven't been on the internet today.
He doesn't said it. They just posted a thing on Instagram. He posted a thing being like, we're going our separate ways, but we're very amicable. It's okay. We'll always love each other. And
what?
Should I text him and find out what happened?
The fuck happened? Maybe. Do you have his number?
You not?
No.
I also think I have Joe Coy's number.
I need to know.
We were on a podcast with him a long time ago.
I need to know immediately. I was so happy
he's
that Chelsea finally found
him. A very nice guy.
He is very so
bring him
nice.
Through. What's he doing right now?
He's a podcast guy. He might come back.
Call him up
so
and see
sad.
What he thinks
have
about
you,
this movie.
Like, I don't know if you guys follow Chelsea the way like obsessively
I know
that
you
I do.
That's why I assumed you knew.
Which
is why I brought it up to begin with.
Computer today. She has changed into a different human being with him in like a really great, beautiful, vulnerable way.
I know. I watched their because I follow him and I see their life together. It looks so loving and fun and goofy.
Something weird must have happened for that to just be so sudden.
Yeah. I don't know.
Anyways, I'm rooting for them to get back together now all of a sudden.
I was just going to say that the closing number, so many things are happening in the movie that are happening during the play.
Yeah.
And the play's it's like, still happening. What's happening? Like the audience can't possibly know what's going on in this show. If you were to think of this, like, what is this show about? What is that show about? He's like, I paid my whore. He throws money down on her. And you're like,
such a fucking good moment. And well, I've paid my whore.
It's like, but the audience watching is going to be like, huh? It's what?
Did you know that the emotions of a breakup, like the rupture of a primary attachment, is felt and fires the same neurotransmitters as a, well, obviously we know it feels like a death or like a traumatic event, like a car crash, but it's also in the same place that physical pain is felt.
Huh.
Which is why you have a broken heart where you actually feel they like have a pressure.
Like, you know, like people that die right after their significant others. Yeah. It's like a broken heart syndrome.
Yeah, right.
It's real. You can
podcast for dick jokes, but you also come here to learn something.
Like, you tell me, when I was a freshman in high school and I broke up with my 2-year girlfriend, I felt some pain. I listened to Yesterday by the Beatles 100,000 times. That was my breakup song, because yesterday all my troubles did seem so far away.
It helps explain, though. It doesn't excuse. Christian straight up sucks in the climax of this movie.
What?
What do you mean, what?
What?
He is a little whiny bitch boy. He's so rude to her. He's like, she's trying to get away and he's just trying to pay her money.
Did you not just hear me talk about how traumatic a heartbreak can be?
You think that excuses his actions? They are backstage during a show.
For sure.
They are in the middle of a show. He's trying to force money on her to say, let me pay. If it meant nothing to you, let me pay you like the rest. And then in front of an entire audience, throws money at Nicole Kidman, who's on the ground crying.
And dying.
Throws money at her, calls her a whore. You think that that's a cool guy?
I would like to pause for this moment and ask, what's the craziest thing you did after a breakup? I'd like to know.
In texting or calling, said hurtful things.
You
right?
Never like
of course
fucking
I did.
Drove over to someone's house, or you never tore their room apart or keyed their car, or slashed their tires.
No,
you never did anything violent.
What did you do?
No,
I'm never kicking Kelsey off this show.
Let me just tell you, I am loyal as fuck, and I am loyal for my friends. So if you ever fucked over me or my friends, I've hurt you.
No, I never went to violence, but I know that I said mean things
said things
I didn't mean, you know.
It's like a blind
you
rage.
Wanna hurt it's like you are feeling hurt, especially in those adolescent hormonal years.
Oh,
you want them to feel pain too.
Yes.
I want you to hurt. Yeah. You hurt me, and it's like you punched me. I want to punch you back.
Rejection, but wait, so when you're watching this movie, you're not like, Christian, whoa, bro.
I was like, I under fucking stand how bad he
under fucking stand.
Under fucking stand.
Sweet and emotional he was to her. All he did was like pour his heart. He was ready to run away with her, and then to get to that point where he's throwing money on her and saying, take it, you are. Like,
I've paid my whore.
I mean, listen, it's victim blaming 100%. Like, I fully agree it was fucked up and bad, but it's a movie. And I was like, I feel so bad that he is so fucking hurt.
Wow.
Because a big piece of the thing that we forgot to mention about Nicole Kidman's whole character, is she dying?
She's dying.
She's dying.
She's dying.
From the moment we meet her, we see that she's coughing up blood, and we know immediately, okay, well, what was that about in the late 1800s? Oh, well, she's got leukemia. She's
tuberculosis.
Dying. And then they full on just say it.
And no one mentions this, but tuberculosis is contagious. And she was kissing a whole bunch of men.
Everyone. And singing.
And singing. And so I think...
Wait, does she have tuberculosis or leukemia?
No, tuberculosis.
Okay, that's what I meant. Sorry, my bad.
Yeah, I don't know where leukemia came from. I was like, that's more like A Walk to Remember, which is a great movie. But
tuberculosis.
So wait, she has tuberculosis, which is contagious.
And she kissed a lot of people. And I feel like if we would have seen the aftermath of this movie...
Everyone has.
Yeah, and like dead.
Wow,
yeah.
What a sequel that would be.
It really took you back then.
Yeah. There weren't medicine.
No.
Wasn't good.
There weren't medicine.
They barely had plumbing. They were shitting in the street back then.
Yeah, no, but boy, did their props department.
That's a musical
department
number I want to see.
Hey. A great
We haven't given enough time to Ewan McGregor, who is the star of this film, boyishly good looking. I... you know, from the first frame, I'm like, you motherfucker, like pretending that you're an awkward guy. You are beautiful.
He's
how
supposed
dare
to be
you?
20.
No way. Yeah, I got older woman vibes from this. I didn't know why.
She looked really young to me. He looked young, but old guy playing a young guy.
Their relationship felt that way.
He was acting like a young boy falling in love for the first time.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I think that he's an attractive man, but I actually remember when I was watching it, like him compared to like Nicole the other Kidman. Leads of things of the day. Like back when Pierce Brosnan was 007, and like he's just so polished and clean. So that in my mind was what leading men should look like. So when I did see him, I actually felt like, oh, this guy isn't all about.
He's a regular guy.
He looked to me. He seemed like regular guy. Yeah. And he was more about the writing and emotions.
He was not main character.
How about that?
You thought he was
especially
hotter
at
than
that
shit?
Time?
I think he's gorgeous.
He's gorgeous.
He is. But at the early 2000s, yeah. That wasn't what a gorgeous. That was like
I
Leonardo
wasn't
DiCaprio.
Like hanging pictures up of him. Yeah, bitch. That's what I'm talking about.
Right. Like really. Yeah. Clean skin, hot, young, yeah. Blonde, and or brunette men. Yeah, that was all you got.
I don't know why my mind keeps going back to Will Smith, but that was my
and Will
like,
Smith.
Oh,
I mean,
the muscle,
gorgeous
the
man.
Yeah, Ewan McGregor. I was just kind of like, he's a guy who just.
He's a guy.
He wants to be in love so deeply.
Okay. That's not, me watching it again for the first time last night, I was like, you're way too beautiful for me to believe you as a stammering
fool. You have so many more wonderful memories of him as an actor now. Yes.
Great point.
That have made him hotter, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking about Big Fish. I'm thinking about Obi-Wan.
Yeah, but talk about reactions. Tell me that man doesn't have the best facial expressions of like holding emotion, singing with emotion like that.
He feels like a theater actor in
this
movie.
Is,
and,
I'm sure.
And it's really good.
Yeah, to be able to sing and emote like that and hold it and play to camera.
So much pain in his face.
That's
especially
what I'm
in
saying.
That, like, I paid my horror scene. He's sad.
He's
so
crying.
Sad.
He's
yeah.
crying.
And then, when they do sing to each other at the end, oh, the come what may, walking back in the theater. That's where I can hold crying. My tears through the whole movie, and then there, it's over.
They get lifted up, and the way that they hold each other,
does
like
love lift you up where you belong? Belong,
where yes. eagles fly.
But just it's melt. Just the come what may, what's it called? The
melody.
Yeah, it's there's a better name for what it is because you keep returning to it. It's not an anthem.
Earworm.
There's a name for it. I'll remember it. There's a musical name. It's like a banner. Of the song. It's because you can use it whenever you want and sing it however you want. And it's like this, but it's
and
so
it's,
powerful
it's so,
and simple.
It's in front of thousands of people watching. It's the finale number. It's improvised in the moment.
Right.
It's like, he's about to walk out and leave her forever. And like, she uses their secret love song to get him to turn back around and then sings it with them. And then when he starts singing back to her, that's her sign that he loves her too. And that, oh my God. And then she fucking dies at the end of the song. And
the fucking ending. I was like, what? That's it? You're just going to write the end and then it's the end? And
he
you're
told
just gonna...
you in the beginning that she dies.
I know. I knew it was
die.
Happening. But at least I thought, I don't know why I keep comparing this to Titanic. I thought we were going to have a moment of like, she's dead, but also she's always in my heart. And then we get to see them live together. It's like,
and
no.
She's just sad. She's
dead. The movie's over.
Zach,
goodbye.
This is a true story. This is based on a true story between a love triangle of a real performer in the Moulin. It was called like Moulin Rouge Marmont. Or something in Paris. And
it turns out they had a gas leak.
He wrote the story.
Wow.
And that is how this movie ended, where she was like, tell our story, promise me you'll tell the world of our love. And then he dies and then he makes the movie and it's so meta. It's a film about a film about a show that's in a show.
It's so ridiculous.
Ooh.
And it's just made with all the influence of MTV in like 1999, but in 2002. It's like, what is popular right now?
Christina Aguilera.
Yes. And then they even like had that companion piece of the Moulin Rouge like song that was on MTV. So it really felt like Moulin Rouge was pop culture in that moment.
Did you guys see Elvis, by the way?
Not yet. I do want to see it.
There's a moment in that where I forget what Elvis song is playing, but it's basically like him walking down. It's like, doom, doom, tch. It's a different song, but they mix in everybody. And then they also have Toxic as a way to like, it's just, Baz Luhrmann is out of control. We talked about Baz's style, which is one of a kind.
Yeah.
And I love camp, okay?
Oh,
I
say camp,
he
baby.
Is the campiest of the camp.
Yeah.
He makes decisions in this film, I would say, that don't all work for me.
That's unfortunate because this wasn't made for you.
It really was. And you're going to hear me the things that I'm like, huh? And you'd be like, what, Zach, you should love this shit.
Tell me.
I genuinely believe, even though that didn't work for me, he is a phenomenal director.
Yeah.
Because to get an entire cast and crew to all buy in to this wackadoodle vision, that is hard. The editing is so fast.
Yes.
And I mean, we talked about that before, how many cuts per second in a way that is like dizzying.
Yeah.
But then there's this choppy slow motion that we mentioned and it happens in the beginning of the movie. And I went, I assumed, because I mentioned Elvis, I saw Elvis, the beginning of that movie is a million miles per hour. And I thought that maybe Boz got a note of, Boz, darling, we love it. Maybe slow it down a little bit. And so he had to like slow it down in post. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, there's slow motion, which is very smooth. But if you
Fast
take-
Fast and the Furious, the tire spinning. Mm-hmm. Is a smooth example.
Way to
of
give us a call to
that,
one of
that
our
speaks
favorite.
To our
yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's a good like. You can see a car cheering. Moving in slow motion. It's smooth and it's
or
beautiful.
Or like any badass guy walking away from an explosion, slow motion, smooth. But then if you take footage that was filmed at normal speed and slow it down, there's not enough frames in between, and so you get this choppy. I mean, if you've ever tried to do slow mo in iMovie, you know what this is. That effect is. Throughout the movie, relentlessly.
Once again, I would like to pose that this was an intentional.
Oh, it was absolutely intentional.
Because think about the moments that it's done in. He wants you to feel like it should be a slowed down moment in your life. And
I think
he's
it
like,
looks
I'm not
going
to only
though.
Just inject it into you. I'm going to fucking shove it down your throat and out your butthole. I'm going to slow this down in a way that forces you to feel. The intensity of slow motion. Because often they put slow motion in and you're like, whoa, you don't want to like recognize it. It should be smooth. It should be like, you
I mean,
know.
You got me there. It definitely gets your attention.
Yes.
Sure does.
That's my point.
Well, I guess what's your favorite moment in that whole movie? Like if you had to pick a scene, if you had to pick a line of dialogue, mine, I don't know why. But every time anyone says anything about Moulin Rouge, my brain just goes, open the door. And it's the most insignificant moment of the scene. But it is just like the way he says it is so funny. And I think it is because everything is said so goofy by so many of the characters all the time. Like that first him, when they're like, how do we write a play? And he's like, what about these? And like, it's genius.
Yeah,
they're just
yeah.
so ready to just scream all the time. And open the door to me is every line in the movie is open the door.
Yeah. That was when the conductor was, they were missing their cue
yeah, they were
to come through the door. And he just says,
open the door.
Open the door.
Twice.
I think my favorite moment, oh my God, it's like trying to make me pick. Okay, I think mine has to be when it's the moment, because we were talking about this, I think, before it started. We were like, how long is Moulin Rouge over a course of period of time, right?
Oh, I don't
because
yeah,
it's,
right.
it's like
how many
conception
days does it take place?
Of an idea to selling it and pitching it to an investor to putting it on. For some reason, it feels like 3 days. It feels like this movie happened in 3 days. But when you really look at it, and my favorite moments are probably like the in-betweens, like when she's supposed to be out with the Duke and she doesn't want to be, and instead she's like doing a little thing with Christian or like when they get the day off or they say they're rehearsing and they're just like laying in bed. And it's like, it's those moments that slowed it down and like went away from the kookiness. And it was so real when you were just like, ah, who hasn't done that when they're falling in love, where you just throw everything else away and like that's all that matters. That's what my favorite part was.
Yeah, it's like the first night you stay up all night just talking.
It's the whole movie is them staying up the whole night just talking.
The one moment that melted my icy heart and I burst out howling is they do this twice, but it's the first one's at the end of the Elephant Love medley, and very small in the corner of the frame you just see a face in the moon going This face is like vibrating inside the moon, a mustachio man.
The moon's singing.
Sure that Baz Luhrmann did acid, right? And like wrote down everything unique he saw and was like, I'm going to put this into a movie.
At least he did acid and then some.
It definitely seems like you need to be familiar with hallucinating to create those visuals.
Again, I genuinely think that he had a gas leak.
Maybe they just got real absinthe.
Yeah.
And did it.
Yeah, I bet.
And like, we need to do absinthe to make this movie because everyone in this time who would have existed was doing absinthe.
Was drinking absinthe.
So we need to know what that's like as 100%. Artists.
And that's probably what they felt like. And that's how they edited it. Maybe the editors were drinking absinthe.
I feel like everyone involved with this film probably did a hallucinogen as part of the hiring process.
And that's how we got Nicole Kidman barking.
Yeah.
Yeah, the barking will just...
You've got to bark. Like, I've got to bark. You've got to bark.
Yeah. And she crushed it. I believed her. I was like, okay. And you will never see her do that.
Again, I was like, I believe this. It's crazy. And it's like kind of like cringy, embarrassing.
Yeah, very.
And yet still a weird erotic scene that's happening. And just
you forget she's Nicole fucking Kidman. Yeah. The whole movie, I was like,
she's flopping around.
The biggest star of our time next to Meryl Streep. And she's fucking insane.
Yeah.
She's dancing around a table, like jerking her knees up and like doing the can-can and like hopping around like a fucking bunny and throwing spirit fingers around. Like, she is a maniac in this movie. Yeah. And you believe every second of it.
It is very funny. I mean, a big storyline back when this happened is that the way she, like, to get an Oscar, she had to put on a fake nose in the hours and play like a drab, ugly woman and have a very restrained performance. But that could not be further from, like, it is kind, even though, again, shocker, you guys know by this point, I didn't really love the movie.
Sure.
But
idiot.
The fact.
But I understand. It is a love-hate movie.
But I appreciate that her performance was so big and that she still got nominated, right? Because that's not acting that we appreciate.
No.
And I'm like, wow, what a gift
to
see an actress of that caliber go all the way and then some.
It's a very good point. Like, this is for sure the biggest I've ever seen as a character, except for maybe Paddington 1.
I think this is the biggest you'll ever see any character.
I think the reason that you like it and the reason that I like it is because the theatrical nature of it speaks to the high school thespian, the way that the first time you see Les Miserables, the way that the first time you see Wicked speaks to the high school theater.
You have to overact so can see it. You
aren't still trying to be a theater performer now.
Yeah.
You don't know that.
Yes, we do.
I am. Yeah, still trying to be a theater performer.
I would
performer
give
now.
Up everything to go like be on Broadway.
Maybe. I wouldn't. It's too much work. But I would like to still write and perform theatrical shows, which I do.
Which you have to over-emote so everyone in the back row can see you. And this is what the actors are doing in film.
You get to.
Mm-hmm.
With theater acting,
you get to.
You get to be as bananas as you want to be. And as long as you, as your stupid character, believe it, you get to do it. I'm doing this show with Lueberger called The Wizard of Friendship right now. We're literally acting like it's a children's programming show. When we are talking, we are all facing the audience and directly speaking, like directly to the camera and being like, I don't know, I'm scared. It's like so...
Why did that sound sexy? Why do you have to make it sexy?
Because we're doing like, because that's in a scene where the forest is too hot. We're in a sexy forest. All the trees have abs and everyone's sexy. And we're like, it's too sexy. I'm scared. Okay. And it's just you don't get to act like that in a movie.
Ever.
You don't get to have a sexy forest in a movie.
No, now we get like Moulin Timothée Rouge, Chalamet, who like raises an eyebrow or like twitches his lip. And we're like,
Timothée.
Yeah. You can get
you get to be ridiculous. And it's so much fun to perform that way. If you've ever been able to be in a kooky play and you get to perform goofy, it's a fucking blast.
The actors are sweating constantly in this movie. And I believe it's gross. Like, she's wet
dripping
often. Yeah. And I'm like, that's real sweat. That's not
theater.
Ziegler has like upper lip sweat
all the time.
And I just was like, someone pat that.
No, but
down.
Think about a ringleader. Like, his makeup is creasing.
I like
lines.
How gross it is.
Yeah.
It feels like that is probably exactly French. How fucking old France theater was.
They look like they all
cakey makeup. And the fact that the only thing is that their skin should be wildly broken out.
Mm.
Every single person should look like a mutant under that makeup. What I like about all of the characters, and you said it earlier, is that how all of them are invested in the love story. But something about it seemed sweet to me by the end of the movie, the way that like the sort of ringleader, he's like, he genuinely cares, because before you're like, it's unclear if he just is trying to make money off of her, but he genuinely cares, and they're also sad. And then she literally dies, and it's like this overwhelmingly sad moment. And yet somehow the story of love, and like, I kind of feel like when he's writing, like the movie's about to start over again.
Yeah.
That like, okay, now we're going to, and we're just going to live this love story over and over and over and over. And we know that she's going to die, but we're going to watch it again. And we're going to go through all of it. And then she's going to die. And then like, because the way that ends the same way it begins insinuates to me the movie's about to start again. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's supposed to be about this like cycle of love.
Of him telling the story of their love that he promised as a show, which performs 7 days a week.
Yes.
Ready for some fun facts?
Fun facts with Zach's back.
Woo, yeah. One more. I almost mentioned this as my favorite moment was the necklace being put on Nicole Kidman, this crazy diamond. I mean, because it's just so unbelievable. And I wasn't sure. I was like, is it real? I don't even know. They were real diamonds and platinum, and it was the most expensive piece of jewelry ever specifically made for a movie ever.
What?
Up to that point, it's Stefano Canturi necklace made with 1,308 diamonds, weighed a total of 134 carats.
Oh.
And it was worth an estimate. I also thought pounds. I was like, oh my God.
It's like, this is a child, teenager being put on her.
Worth an estimated $1 million.
Woo.
Hot damn. Also was like, why?
She should have run away and sold that.
That's what I was like, Nicole Kidman, if you love Ewan McGregor's character, just
sell the necklace.
Just be with the Duke
she
for like a week.
She wanted to be an actress.
And then wanted to be an actress.
Okay.
That's what I said.
Somebody's never had a fucking dream before.
He says,
before.
You don't know if I'm not a theater kid. Like, now
we do. Now we get it.
So Ewan McGregor was not the first choice.
No.
Yes.
Who?
Heath Ledger lost the role because he was deemed too young to be a romantic interest for Nicole Kidman.
Oh.
Whoa.
That would have been great.
Yeah. That normally you sometimes hear the opposite casting. You're like, oh, thank God that didn't happen. No. But now I'm kind of like, dang, I would have liked to have seen that.
Because, you know, at that age, did he have the chops? Was he still coming out of how old would he have been?
I have no idea.
It is interesting, though, because they went old man. They went the opposite way. Yeah. Interesting.
They went with also, I bet that the Star Wars movies had some effect to that. Because he was cast, he was going to be a big lead. He needed a big lead. No, I'm Ewan McGregor. That they wanted someone who is a guaranteed big lead the way that the other people in the movie were.
This was a setup.
And I just think they're like, we need to sell tickets and like, if we need the biggest names possible. And because
did that
he
do
was
it for
coming,
him? Do people see him as a sex symbol now?
I don't know if it was even about a sex symbol as much as it was like, we need a big name. And now that he's in Star Wars, he's a big name.
Well, Ewan
and he
is definitely a hard name to say.
It's hard. I never say it. I just say Ewan.
Yeah.
So we got some other Christians included. Leo DiCaprio, Jake Gyllenhaal, Hugh Jackman, and Ronan Keating. Okay.
I would have obviously said
Other Satines. We could have had Drew Barrymore.
No.
Kirsten Dunst. Love her, but no. Hilary Swank. No. Kate Winslet, Renee Zellweger. Mm-hmm. None of those would have worked.
Kate Winslet would have worked.
Kate Winslet, maybe.
Rose, baby.
I mean,
yeah,
she could do anything.
Big
She's
jewel,
just the most
love.
Incredible actress of all time. Yeah. So she could do anything. And then this is really good for Toulouse, which is John Leguizamo's character. They considered Rowan Atkinson, Mr. Bean himself.
That would have been funny.
That would have worked.
He might have been in the background of this, and we just didn't even see him.
I know.
I believe it. Every character is Mr. Bean in this.
Yeah.
So I told you like my shock, because again, this movie is so wacky. This was nominated for Best Picture. It was nominated. It tied for the most nominations that year. Beautiful Mind ended up winning Best Picture that year. But I want you to just listen to how stacked this year was.
I'm ready.
This is 2001. These are all the movies that were not nominated for Best Picture, okay?
That were not nominated.
Not nominated. Okay. Amelie, The Royal Tenenbaums, Shrek, Memento.
Shrek.
Memento. I mean, this is just a big year. Memento.
That's big.
Training Day. Ocean's 11. Mulholland Drive. Spirited Away. And The Fast and the Furious.
Blasphemy.
What a year.
What a year.
What a fucking year. And also Zoolander came out that year.
Yeah, but you know what? Look, Zoolander, all that shit. It's like, it was kooky. It was a crazy time. We were off of rockers.
It was a crazy time.
It was pre-social media. We were still doing lots of drugs in public and stuff.
And the final fun fact is actually...
What?
We don't do what we used to.
The social media is when drugs stopped.
Yeah, they used to just do it straight at the table.
Better times.
Not in Carthage, Tennessee.
Oh.
Damn shame.
They didn't have it there.
The final fun fact is not about the movie, but about this podcast. And it's that Keith actually was not our first choice for a guest.
True.
He was our backup because when we launched this podcast, I came up with a list of movies and a list of guests. And I had a couple movies for Keith, and I went to our very own Eugene Liang, and I said, you love Moulin Rouge, right? And he looked at me with a death stare and said, you can't do that on Guilty Pleasures. And I said, why not? And he said, because it's like a really good movie.
Yes.
And I'm like, I know, but that's why it's fun, because it's like a good one, but it's crazy. And
he then refused.
He refused.
He wouldn't come defend
it. He scoffed. He refused.
He was like in denial that people would think this is a guilty pleasure.
That we could even discuss it. It's camp. Look, any campy movie is fair game.
I think it's totally fair game. I think it is totally bananas. And if you told me you didn't like it, I'd be like, I get it.
He did tell you.
I like it.
Yeah.
I think it's cuckoo bananas. And I love to rewatch it because it's just joyous.
Well, Keith, now is your time to decide if this movie is a pleasure, a guilty pleasure, just plain guilty, and to tell people why they should watch this movie. You already started, so take it away.
I think it's absolutely a pleasure. It's a delight, especially for me in Carthage, Tennessee, where I did not have access to go see theater. And seeing something like that at that time was like, I didn't know that could be a movie. And it inspired me in performing. And I think the reason you should watch it is because it's absolute chaos. I don't even think we described it well to you.
No.
To be honest, because we just kept saying it's insane and colorful. And
all of you indie rom-com, mumblecore kid, Gen Zs will just, I'm fearful. They might throw up.
And I think you'll love it. I think it's bananas. I think you get to see actors being ridiculous, and I think the music is sweet, and I think I'd be surprised if you don't have some sort of sadness, weeping, crying, tearfulness in the end.
At the very least, you're gonna believe that they're in love. You're gonna feel it.
You're gonna know they're in love. And they let you know
they are.
I'm not here to yuck someone's yum. I don't like the movie, but I don't like it.
It's okay.
I don't like it.
It's a love it or hate it movie.
But I think it's so much more interesting to see a movie that goes for it. So I prefer this version of a movie I don't like because there's so much happening. And Baz Luhrmann is not lazy. He's going for it. He's swinging hard.
So hard.
He's working in every frame of it. And there's a lot to love. You get an incredible performance by Nicole Kidman. You get the boyishly handsome Ewan McGregor. And honestly, I mean, what is ultimately a cheat code? You get songs that you already know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you're going to hear your song by Elton John. You go, oh, I like that song, which is the ultimate hurdle that
it's
most musicals have to go over.
Jukebox medley musical.
There you go. Yeah,
you don't get those as often.
Label this guilty or guilty pleasure?
I mean, I'll say it's a guilty pleasure.
Okay, that's better. At least we can still remain friends. On behalf of all theater kids everywhere, this is obviously a pleasure. This is one of my favorite movies. This is one of the best movies. I think it's one of the best musicals turned into movies, turned back into a musical. I highly recommend you watch it. Everyone should watch it. Watch it sober. Watch it on a sick day. Watch it on... You can watch this in the...
Don't watch it on a sick day.
No, you could watch this
in the... You will vomit everywhere.
I think it's a good sick day movie.
I think it's pretty good for that.
Yeah, it'll make you feel better. It's like chicken
soup. You can fall
asleep
in and out of it and be like, when was I dreaming and when was I watching the movie?
Yes, you're going to have weird dreams. Would you say to watch this in daytime or nighttime only?
Anytime is fine.
I
would say don't watch it.
I think you could watch it on a Saturday morning.
Yeah, so it's a pleasure from me, dog.
And if you also don't like it, then you can tweet at me and we'll talk about how we really
feel.
Please
don't. I'm only going to be putting GIFs on your Twitter for the next week of Moulin Rouge.
Roxanne! Keith, thank you so much for joining. Where can people find you and what's something you're working on?
Oh, you can find me at Keith Habs, and you can check out Lou Berger's stuff. Lou Berger has a podcast called Celebrity Theme Song, where we deep dive a celebrity in order to write a theme song for them by the end of the episode. So
it's like
you kind of listen to us writing process, and you get a song at the end of it. And the songs are normally really fucking dumb, but they're really fun.
You get to see a song being made in real time.
Cool. And you learn lightly about a celebrity.
Is
I wouldn't
it out
say that.
Already?
Oh, yeah. So you can listen
you don't
to
promote
it week,
enough,
every,
I've never heard
every
of it.
Week. There's a lot to promote. Well, there's a lot to promote.
That's how we learn about things.
That's true. And then we have the Lou Berger Wizard of Friendship, which we did as a live show in LA. So if you're, isn't going to come out in time for you to see it, but maybe we'll re-put it up because people are loving it and it's super fun to do.
You hear that, people? You got to demand it. I'm at Courtney and all things.
I'm Kelsey Darrow and all things. And I'm Garrick Bernard and all the things.
And until next time, I've paid my whore.